Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. You just heard Orat with Khudafis. I hope you enjoyed that track here on our kind of heavy rock-ish, but like also very sad playlist. Talking about these sad vampire men who love other sad vampire men. I was last we left off, I was talking about what made Interview with a Vampire so popular, and you know, a great part of it, I think, I would agree with like the literary critics who are saying that Interview with the Vampire solely focuses on the experiences of the vampire, and so you really get to you know, they're humanized in a way. But it's also just so much about Anne Rice herself as well, with particular regard to Interview with the Vampire, and as I'll discuss in a little bit, also the case with Moto Hagio's vampires in the Poe clan. When Anne Rice was writing Interview with the Vampire, she was experiencing some of the worst things that a person could ever experience. She had lost her young daughter to a battle with leukemia. She, because of this grief and loss, was experiencing deep depression. She had developed obsessive compulsive disorder. She had also developed an addiction to alcohol. She and her husband were moving through a really turbulent time in their relationship as well, because they had so many existential questions around being a parent and being a caretaker, having this child, the guilt of losing their child to something as horrifying as like childhood cancer, and then also experiencing the alienation of being a parent who loses a child. All of these things were turbocharged into the character Louis. For me, seeing these really human experiences in this character who is supposed to be, you know, very powerful and feared because he's like this like super cool vampire who can kill you, just endeared me more to him and made me feel, I don't know, kind of seen by this character and by Anne Rice. Of course, I think as well, you know, because these characters are not supposed to be human, they also experience the total extremes of this like twisted kind of pain that Anne Rice herself has experienced. You know, it's like, again, it's like turbocharged into these characters. In Interview with the Vampire seasons 1 and 2 of the AMC series, Louis is our main character, because we're focused on the first novel in the series, which is about Louis. And those themes around guilt are just so potent and so devastating. We really see the ways in which his feelings of guilt around Claudia's circumstances and eventual death like twist his memory in one regard, and also what has shaped him for the past several decades. He's unable to like let go of this grief. I think one could argue, you know, like in a character study like this about like a vampire who has experienced like the extremities of human sadness and emotion, like it is not always super relatable for many people who have, you know, who lead normal lives. But thankfully, I'm not a normal person. I really could like deeply, deeply relate to a lot of the stuff that Louis was going through. And even actually, not even just Louis, but I could really, really, really relate to the feelings that Claudia was experiencing with her relationship with Louis and Lestat and the rest of the world. And that, I think, like that quality of these characters can't be there without Anne Rice putting so much of herself into their creation. As I'm thinking about this and reflecting on why it is that I just love this series so much, I couldn't help but to also think about really early boys' love, because similarly, boys' love of the 1970s, when this genre of comics begins to be published in Japan, it too is a vehicle for young female writers to explore their own experiences of deep pain, loneliness, and trauma. And obviously, when I'm thinking about early boys' love and pain, I'm also thinking about Moto Hagio's The Poe Clan. One of her more notable works, and one of the stories that many literary critics would note as being one of the first ever boys' love stories that helps popularize this genre. I want to talk a little bit more about that after the music break, and then after discussing a little bit of the Poe Clan, we're gonna transition onto the next show on CJSF. So we're gonna put a big pin in Interview with the Vampire for next week. But right now, here is some music. This is Blue Eyed Ghost by High Days. Get into it.
This is Bird Note. I'm J. Drew Lanham, an ornithologist, naturalist, and writer. Names are important as they help us tell one thing from the next. My name is Drew. What's yours? Easy enough. Birds aren't so simple. Or rather, we've complicated things that could be simpler. Take my grandmother Mamatha's redbirds. They became northern cardinals and cardinalis cardinalis as I learned more about proper scientific nomenclature. But some days, even with lots of degrees attached to my name, they are redbirds again. And so on, with yellow-billed cuckoos back to rain crows calling out before a storm. Great horned owls, back to cat owls, because of those feather tufts that look like ears. And juncos that arrive in the fall, back to snowbirds. In other words, my grandmother had her own ornithology, her own names for birds. I have mine. Each of us can build our own ornithology and our personal names for these creatures. Keep it simple. What stands out to you about these birds? Once you have a name that means something to you, you'll never forget it. For Bird Note, I'm J. Drew Lanham.
I think that he makes such a good point there in that Bird Note, J. Drew Lanham, because, like, there have been times, for example, where I'm like out birding and I'm like, oh, look, there is an Anna's hummingbird. And my parents will be like, what are you talking about? And then I have to explain to them, oh, you know, there's a bird over there. that's the same bird as the hummingbird that visits the bushes in front of our house. And only then will they be like, oh, amazing. That's birding, baby. You know, just figure it out. Hey, it's Leslie here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. The origins of boys love manga. You know, in the 1970s, okay, actually, we'll start here. Girls' manga, like shoujo manga, manga that is written for young female readers, had for a very long time been primarily been written by men and published by men. In the 1970s, more young women were being published in comics magazines, which also included authors like Keiko Takemiya and Moto Hagio. And them, along with a few others, were called the group The Year 24, referring to Showa era, Showa Year 24, I'm pretty sure. They were considered like the female pioneers of modern day shoujo manga. Of the stories that they wrote about pain, loneliness, they wrote about gendered violence, trauma, and yearning and desire. They wrote about longing for affection and strained parental relationships in many of these stories. And for some of the stories that felt a little bit like they would be hitting too close to home, and sometimes just out of like pure interest of writing male characters over female characters, they started to write these stories that also had romance in them between boys and men. And these were the very, very early stories that would become the boys' love genre of manga and comics that we these days enjoy. The Poe Clan, which is one of Moto Hagio's most well-known stories, explored many of those themes. And in itself, I think like the first couple of stories in the series were not particularly yaoi, particularly homoerotic, actually. So she began writing stories that would become a part of the Poe Clan series in the 1970s, and throughout the many decades of her career, she would go and like sort of revisit the story and add new bits to it. The Poe Clan follows Edgar, a seemingly 14-year-old boy, and his younger sister, Maribel, a seemingly 13-year-old girl, and their parents, the Portsnells. And the Portsnell family moves to different cities every couple of years in England because they are, in fact, members of the Poe Clan, a legacy historical community of vampirella, which is the word that Moto Hagio uses to refer to vampires in the story. The Poe Clan follows various conventions of the gothic horror genre, and so as we read further into the series, we're really following the memories and recollections of various people who have encountered Edgar and Maribel before we learn more about their specific story and how the both of them became vampires. For the remainder of this episode, I don't really have a lot of time to go into a lot of the details about how they turned into vampires. This is something that I will talk about next week instead in part two. But throughout the series, we learn just the deep sense of loneliness that Edgar experiences throughout his mortal life and as a vampire. He and Maribel are abandoned as children by their nursemaid after their mother passes away from an illness. They're left for dead, and they are discovered by a woman named Old Hannah Poe, who is the matriarch of the Poe clan. They don't know that the Poe clan are vampires, but through various circumstances, Edgar finds out, and he, in great part because he discovers the secret when he is so young, he's doomed to a lifetime of loneliness where everybody who is important to him is also snatched away from him for various circumstances. He yearns for companionship and love, and he yearns to be with his family and to lead a normal life where he does not have to experience the isolation of not aging in the way that other people do. Similarly to how Louis and Lestat feel so relatably human because of their problems, Edgar and his companions also feel very human because of their intense feelings of loneliness. When you read the Poe clan, you can't help but to feel quite terrible for these people who are so alienated from the rest of the world, and they have no choice to be because they are so different from humans, right? Obviously, I think, you know, like, if you put, like a genuinely just, like, very by-the-books queer reading on both Interview with the Vampire and also the Poe clan, like, that is enough for one to discuss the themes of queerness in these stories, right? Vampires, they are repressed and desire love and companionship, but they are shunned from society and hunted at some points in various stories. And therefore, you know, we can bring these allegories to experiences of queer people throughout time and the different societies in which queer people are persecuted and shunned from the world, right? That is a valid and important reading of these vampires. However, that is not the reading that I will be taking. Instead, what I think, and this is how we're going to go back to toxic yaoi, and I'm sorry, this is a non-serious radio program today, okay? How it goes back to toxic yaoi, I think, is when you make these characters who are very viscerally, like, relatable and just sad and lonely and human, the way that they yearn, the way that the author makes them yearn in the story, just feels all the so much more intense. That bumps up against their vampiric nature, right? Not necessarily to cause chaos, but to have this, like, slight darkness and edge to them that really strongly impacts their interpersonal relationships. And Somehow, when you put those two things together, deep, intense yearning, kind of not great relationship dynamics, that's what makes that specific toxic yaoi so delicious. I think that's what's happening. And this is where I gotta just press pause and say, I think you gotta join me next week so that I can talk at greater length about this specific reflection. But hey, again, that's next week's problem. So tune in, same place, same time, 90.1 FM on Monday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we will dive deeper into these thoughts that I have around yearning, toxic yaoi, and beautiful vampire men. The beautiful vampire men really gotta watch out, because I'm scooping them up. I'm adding them into my little collection of blurbos. That's not even true, to be honest. I appreciate Lestat. He's not even my favorite vampire in the Interview with the Vampire series. Actually, Louis is my favorite. I love that sad man. Anyways, real quick, just want to say also, if you are in and around SFU this Saturday, August 29th, but hey, again, that's a next week problem. So tune in, same place, same time, Monday, 3 o'clock, here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Listen to Leslie on Typically Tuesdays talk about vampire yaoi. Oh boy. such a serious show I've got on the airwaves, really using my platform for good. Hey, also, before I sign off for today's program, if you are in and around the SFU Burnaby campus area this Saturday, August 29th, you should head on over to SFU Summer Festival. This is not them asking me to talk about it at all. It's $7 for admission and $15 if you want to go to the after party afterwards. But I'm telling you to go because Nonsuite will be performing. Our favorites over at Nonsuite, the beloved idol group who we've featured on, who we have featured on Typically Tuesdays multiple times. And we very much enjoy them over here. I feel like I never really get to, like, talk about a Nonsuite show unless it's in retrospect. So I'm really wanting to take the opportunity to be like, hey, go check out this show. They will be hitting the main stage at 2:55. My suggestion is to go get there at 2:45 to get a good spot so you can cheer them on and just enjoy it. It is going to be one of their final performances of the summer, I think. And they're just fun. Go watch them. I highly encourage you to. I'm going to wrap up the show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Listen to more great CJSF programming. You should listen to Analog Archives with your host, Danny. He goes through the physical archives of the CJSF music library every week, and he plays something kind of weird, kind of cool, kind of just interesting. And he's got great interviews on the program as well. So check it out every Thursday from 6 to 7 here on 90.1 FM. I will talk to you again about Vampire Yaoi very soon. Bye!
Hi, it's Nardwar, the human serviette, saying you're listening to CJSF Burnaby and doo-doo-loo-doo CJSF.